Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The folks over at ESPN have a big question as it relates to Georgia. Now, I've told you before, I like this kind of stuff. I like off-season content. I like way too early top 25s and all that kind of stuff. And I do like it when ESPN kind of highlights a little capsule for each of those top 25 teams. And they, on the pages of ESPN.com the other day, took a look at the biggest off-season question facing each of those teams for the upcoming season. And for Georgia, who's number four in the ESPN way too early top 25, the biggest offseason question is, can the Bulldogs take the final step towards elite status? Now, I will say that this is a little bit of a loaded question. On the one hand, speaking as a Georgia fan to Georgia fans, I think the one thing that you can say about Georgia fans is this question is also on the mind of UGA fans. Georgia fans want to see their team take that next step. We've talked before plenty about the restlessness that exists related to Georgia fans who are just hungry to see this team win a national championship. That's obviously true, and it's not a huge surprise that, you know, Georgia fans would see ESPN asking this question of Georgia. However, there is another part of this. While Georgia fans don't make excuses and don't sidestep the need to win a championship and the restlessness about the fact that Georgia hasn't done that yet, I think there's also a belief among some Georgia fans that, hey, Georgia's actually been more elite than they've been given credit for sometimes in recent years, and maybe it was the fault of, in some cases, ESPN, or at least some of the folks around ESPN, or maybe the fault of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee for not noticing that. Because Georgia, after all, plays in the SEC, where there are always going to be at least one more really good top-flight team that you have to deal with. In other conferences, you don't have that. The ACC, for instance, some cases the Big 12, Notre Dame as an independent. Sometimes those teams get a little easier path towards the College Football Playoff, and there is a belief among some Georgia fans that Georgia's been kind of graded on the curve fairly harshly because it's played in the SEC. Let me give you a piece of example to kind of prove that point, or I should say a piece of evidence to kind of prove that point, and then we'll kind of, you know, move this conversation in the direction that needs to go. Let's go back to 2018 for a moment, in which Georgia goes down to the wire against Alabama in the SEC championship game, and there were a lot of, you know, folks who, after that game, even though Georgia had two losses, a lot of folks who thought that Georgia was still one of the four best teams in the country and should have gotten at-large consideration for the College Football Playoff that year. Of course, the committee doesn't really do that, but there were a lot of people giving voice to this, including the most prominent voice in all of college football, Kirk Herbstreit, who was very articulate on ESPN television, both before the committee made its announcement and then after the committee, you know, picked its top four that did not include Georgia for 2018. Herbstreit was in the belief that Georgia should have been in that group. Let me go back to 2018 here for a moment, let you hear Kirk Herbstreit making the case for why Georgia should have been one of the top four, even though they weren't the SEC champion. This is Herbstreit from 2018.
I felt for the last 5 or 6 weeks that this Georgia team, and I didn't go to Georgia. I'm not from the SEC. You know who I'm loyal to? College football. Not the Big Ten, not Ohio State, not Georgia. When it comes to my job, I'm loyal to just, and I have passion for college football. And I want to see the four best teams get their chance because that's what's right and that's what's fair. Now, it's subjective. Everybody's entitled to who they think is the best, but I'm not pushing for an agenda. I'm not pushing for Ohio State to make it as a fan. I'm pushing for what's right. And what's right is, how can you watch Georgia be number four and then go out and play the number one ranked team and not only hang around with them, but control them for much of the game until Jalen Hurts decides to write a Hollywood script and come back and knock off Georgia. And now we're supposed to say, Georgia, for that performance, you went from four, you're going backwards? To me, if anything, they should have gone up to number three, not backwards to number five.
Biggest voice in the sport, Kirk Herbstreit, most respected analyst in college football, in so many ways, the face of the sport, back in 2018 says, I've seen all the teams in the country play, and I'm telling you right now that Georgia is one of the four best. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee looked at all of that and said, yeah, but we're not putting them in the playoff because they lost the conference championship game. And you don't deserve to be in the playoff if you lose the conference championship game, if you have those two losses. That is what the playoff selection committee said back in 2018. In so many ways, it's so similar to what Georgia heard back in 2007. You know, we had Mark Richt on Cover 4 Live this past week. One of the most prominent moments in Richt's career was that 2007 season when Georgia gets really hot towards the end of the year and right there at the top of the rankings near the end of the year, and you have the right confluence of losses. West Virginia gets upset, for instance, and all this stuff kind of falls into place. All of a sudden, it seems like Georgia may move up to number two in the BCS and actually get a chance to play in that BCS national championship game. But Georgia got told at the time, no, you can't do this. We can't put you in the playoff, or in that case, it was the BCS championship game. We can't put you there because you didn't win your division. If you don't win your division, you don't deserve to be in the national championship game. That's what Georgia got told in 2007. Yet, lo and behold, 4 years later in 2011, Alabama played in the BCS title game without winning its division and did the same thing again in 2017. Somehow, and this is where Georgia fans, I think, have a little bit of a right to get a little irritated with the prevailing narrative sometime in college football, that Georgia gets told one thing one year, and a couple years later, the entirety of the rules, the unwritten rules, have seemingly changed. Georgia got told in 2007, nah, you can't play for the national championship because you don't win your division. Alabama 2011, we're actually going to change that unwritten rule, and it's fine for Bama to do that in 2011, but it wasn't fine for Georgia to do that in 2007. Same thing in 2018. Georgia missed the playoff because it lost its conference championship game. And the unwritten rule that kept them out was, nah, I'm sorry, we can't put you in the playoff after you just lost a conference championship game. But then lo and behold, what happened this past year? And this is where things get really interesting. Notre Dame got selected for the college football playoff after having lost a conference championship game. So all of a sudden now the rules seem a little different. The same way that Georgia dealt with kind of a shifting scale of rules back 2007 to 2011, all of a sudden now we see kind of a shifting scale of rules here in modern college football as well. 2020, it was fine to make the college football playoff after having lost a conference championship game, whereas Georgia seemed unfairly, depending on your perspective, of course, but harshly graded after its very close, narrow loss to Alabama in what was a pretty thrilling game all the way around. So when ESPN asked the question of, can the Georgia Bulldogs take the final step towards elite status, Georgia actually has a great opportunity to do that this year. Because as Herb Street said in the audio that you heard a moment ago, what if all these other teams in the country were having to judge themselves and measure themselves against Alabama? What if that was the measuring stick by which we determined if they were truly elite or not? Guess what? If not beating Alabama is the proof that you're not elite, then most of the country would fall prey to that. Georgia, because of its recruiting, because of its on-field performance, because of everything else it has going for it, is virtually better than, you know, 125, 126, 127 of the 130 teams that play FBS-level college football. But the problem is Georgia doesn't get to play most of those teams. Georgia's in the SEC, having to measure itself against the very best in the SEC, and that's obviously a big challenge that Georgia faces. But this year can be different. Now listen, UGA fans want to see Georgia win the SEC championship, want to see Georgia take down Alabama, and there's a very good chance that come December, they may get a chance to do that. But this year, Georgia can put a lot of pressure in the College Football Playoff Selection Committee before you even get to the SEC championship. Because Georgia has had to measure itself against Alabama or an LSU in 2019, one of these top-flight SEC teams. It hasn't gotten the benefit of measuring itself against a Clemson, one of the other teams we kind of see as a regular fixture in that playoff. But this year, week one, Georgia gets a chance to play Clemson. This year, week one, Georgia gets a chance to show what it, as a top-flight SEC team, can do against a program like Clemson. And if Georgia wins that game week one, then all of a sudden the idea that the SEC may have at least two playoff-worthy teams, all of a sudden, that becomes a lot easier to conjure up. And listen, obviously, Georgia fans don't want to concede the SEC championship. And as I said before, Georgia would have a very good chance of winning that game if these two teams were able to play. But by beating Clemson week one, this huge national showdown, this game that Georgia fans have kind of craved for a long time, all of a sudden you can put pressure on the committee to acknowledge, yes, the best brand of football is played in the SEC. And whatever happens in the SEC West with Alabama, Georgia, by beating Clemson week one, proves that it's definitely playoff worthy no matter what happens on that first Saturday in December. And if there's a comparison later on to be made between a you know, Georgia team with maybe one loss, a Clemson team that kind of looms as the ACC champion, the fact that Georgia won that game head-to-head ought to matter there in that spot. So the committee has had it easy when it comes to the SEC the last couple of years. They've been able to only put one of the league's teams in the college football playoff. They've had the opportunity to kind of cherry-pick programs out of other leagues to put in that spot. But if Georgia goes out and beats Clemson week one, all of a sudden, Georgia making a case for itself as a playoff team before you even get to the SEC championship, that becomes a lot easier to imagine. Now, I was going to talk for a moment about how Georgia may win that game against Clemson when it's played, but I've already gone a little long on this topic for today, so let me save that for tomorrow. We'll do some of this also with Connor Riley coming up in a moment. And so let me just briefly shift gears to this. I think it's really funny in the kind of media circle around UGA just how big every story becomes, even stories that are essentially not stories at all. Let me give you an example of this. Drayshon Miller was a cornerback for West Virginia, and mentioning Miller is something already that a decent amount of the folks who are watching, listening to this show, they're already kind of familiar with Miller because there had been this online chatter of, hey, here's the guy that played for Jamal Adai at West Virginia. Here's a graduate transfer defensive back, seemed to have a pretty good season. Georgia seemingly in need of a veteran presence, the defensive back spot. It's almost like people started connecting these dots of Miller to Georgia without any tangible evidence that Georgia was even interested in Miller. I don't know if Georgia was or wasn't, but it's amazing how far down the path this story got without any real substantial connection to UGA whatsoever. Well, if there was ever a Drayshon Miller news cycle, it came to an end yesterday. If you're watching on video, you saw this on the screen a moment ago, Miller putting it out there on Twitter that he's actually going to Auburn, committing there to Auburn. There's some Auburn folks on social media trying to make this a head-to-head win versus Georgia. But once again, there is very little tangible proof that UGA was interested in Miller at all. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. We don't know. But as we've said many times before, that if Georgia brought in the graduate transfer defensive back, it'd be fine with that. There's obviously a case to be made that Georgia could benefit from that veteran presence. Experience does matter at the defensive secondary. But also, most of the teams in the country are actually pretty envious, probably, of the level of talent that Georgia already has, even if it's guys who haven't played very much, or in some cases not at all, like former five-star Kelee Ringo. So if Georgia wants to go to bat with the defensive secondary that it has for the upcoming season, we've said this as recently as yesterday on the show, I believe, we've said it many times, you know, the last couple of weeks, that if Georgia wants to go to bat with the defensive secondary that it has, I got no problem with that whatsoever. Drayshon Miller chooses Auburn. Was he ever in the mix for Georgia? Not really sure. But don't be so quick to assume that what Georgia already has on the roster, you know, combination of guys who've been here since 2017, young guys with a lot of talent, don't be so quick to assume that this group that's already here can't be the makings of an effective secondary. We'll talk more about this coming up. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Great to have you with us. All kinds of platforms now. Video side, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, so many different video platforms. Podcast-wise, we're on all of them. A lot of you checking in on TuneIn. You know, so many different ways for folks to kind of check in on the show. Just really appreciate you being a part of it. Of course, our friends on the radio in the Classic City on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We always love being with you as well. And we really appreciate our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, we have a nice studio, you know, lots of technology, producer to help us keep all this running. All of that could not be done if it wasn't for the folks at Engineered Solutions of Georgia that want to partner with us and help us distribute the show each and every day. So big thanks to them and a big invitation to all of you. If you're dealing with a waterproofing or foundation issue, and many of you as homeowners are, I know it's one of the things that probably gives you more angst than anything as a homeowner, but the biggest mistake you could make would be putting something like that off. Or another mistake would be to choose a company other than ESOG to do that for you. There are a lot of reasons why ESOG recommends itself. First of all, they're proud partners of UGA, and it's always fun to kind of support a company that supports UGA. That's fun to do with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. ESOG's been good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily for a long time. They've also got two full-time engineers on staff. That means for those water spots you notice in your basement, crawl space, whatever else, or those cracks in your foundation that you know really need to be fixed, you can put someone smart to work for you to help get that done. They're also really easy to get in touch with. Simply dial 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That telephone number will get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of George. All right, I am going to get Connor Riley on the program coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's squeeze in a quick version of Around the Doghouse. And obviously some very sad, troubling news coming out of the NFL. It has been a rough, rough rookie year for former Georgia offensive tackle Isaiah Wilson. And it seems like it's gotten even worse there with the Tennessee Titans. Wilson put this up on Twitter last night, then deleted it. He said, "I'm done with football as a Titan. No further comments." And I just hate to see that. And I won't pretend to know everything that's gone on with Wilson in terms of, you know, inside his head and everything else, but he's only played four snaps all year long, right? Just four snaps for the Titans all year long. I mean this in all sincerity. There is nothing more sad to me than self-destructive behavior. And you don't just see this from top-flight athletes. You see this from people in all walks of life. Maybe all of us are a little guilty of self-destruction from time to time. It's just the saddest, most disappointing thing. I just hate it for anybody who's kind of feeling like they have that going on in their own life. In Wilson's case, hard not to watch the way in which this is all unfolded and say, man, this is a guy self-destructing in a time which he ought to be enjoying the very best that life has to offer. And you can say, well, he's already got his money. What does it really matter? But the truth is, if he's having a hard time, sort of managing his behavior as an NFL player the way that it is right now, he's also going to have a hard time holding on to his money, too. That's just a cold, hard fact that he may be dealing with in the time to come. And, you know, you kind of put yourself in the position of an NFL GM here for a moment, a personnel guy. And this is always the toughest thing, right? Knowing how someone's going to behave after they've gotten their money. And I don't think we've ever, you know, you can do Wunderlich tests, you can do psychological evaluations, you can interview these guys up and down over and over again. I just don't know there's a good way to know kind of how some guys are going to react after they've got the contract, after they've been drafted. Because I got to tell you, you go back and watch the Isaiah Wilson that I feel like, and I shouldn't say I know him because I only, you know, talked to him a few times, but the guy that I saw at Georgia. This is never the kind of outcome that I would have imagined from him once he got to the NFL. In fact, let me give just a brief piece of proof about this. Go back and listen to a brief conversation I had with Wilson, you know, right there in the early stage of his career after he had had a very good 2018 year after having not played at all in 2017. I had a chance to ask him, you know, what that experience was like, knowing that someone that came into the class with him, Andrew Thomas, was having that first year success that Wilson probably himself craved for himself. Listen to like the thoughtful, careful, smart, well-worded answer that Wilson gave, you know, going into the 2019 season when he spoke these words. Would you ever imagine a guy that was capable of being this mature would have the issues that he's dealt with now in the NFL? This is Wilson going into 2019.
I want everybody on the team to win. I don't care who you are. If you're on this team and you're in red and black and you're wearing that G and you're out there grinding with me, I want you to win. Whatever's best for the team is what I want. My freshman year, I wasn't ready to play. I sat down and I learned how to be ready to play. In 2018, I played.
I mean, listen, I'm sorry. If I were to listen to a guy like that say enough things like that, that's a guy as an NFL GM that I would have felt okay drafting. I wouldn't have been scared away from drafting Isaiah Wilson under those circumstances. And yet, look how it's turned out for the Tennessee Titans. He has a chance to be the worst first-round pick of all time in terms of the outcome for the team that drafted him. I think it goes to show you that, first of all these draft picks are a little bit of a crapshoot, no matter what we want to say to the contrary. And there's a reason why probably this time of year, a lot of these NFL GMs end up having a lot of sleepless nights. So all we can do is wish Wilson well. That he figures this out. I don't know that his time in Tennessee is going to be able to continue, nor do I know that he's ever going to get a chance to play anywhere else in the NFL, just given how weird all this has been. But obviously the talent is there, and if he can figure out what has troubled him to this point, then maybe he has a chance to still figure all of that out. It's a sad thing to see because Wilson was a guy that I loved cheering for here at UGA. We'll make that around the doghouse. And before we bring on Connor Riley, let me also give a big shout out to my friends at Marlow's Tavern for a great event they have going on right now, the Bayou and Bourbon event. This is a taste of the Big Easy, the Mardi Gras style, you know, food that Louisiana is famous for, coming to your local Marlow's Tavern right there. Chef John Metz has carefully curated all these menu items, and they have really put a great spin on all of this, whether it's the roasted chicken and shrimp gumbo, which sounds amazing, the Gnarlin style po' boy, deconstructed jambalaya, honey bread bourbon pudding, what a great dessert option that is. Of course, plenty of delicious bourbon cocktails as well. That's all going on for you right now at your local Marlow's Tavern, the Bayou and Bourbon event. Please go to marlowstavern.com to find out a lot more about this, how it's unfolding at the tavern right there in your neighborhood, and just all those great menu items. Great chance to be a part of a really fun event. Bayou and Bourbon going on right now at Marlow's Tavern. How much do you love the Louisiana spin that Marlow's puts on its name right there with the EAUX there at the end? So really fun stuff. Marlow's Tavern, Bayou and Bourbon. Make sure you check that out, marlowstavern.com, for more on that. All right, we want to keep the Georgia conversation going right now. Connor's had some great stuff on the pages of dognation.com over the last couple of days. So I want to get into all of that with him. And then a little bit of trolling coming from Gainesville, Florida, against these Georgia Bulldogs. We'll get your game face on for the cocktail party in October before we're done today. We'll be very, very serious about that. But for now, a lot of Georgia football talk. Let's talk to our buddy Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
A lot of ground I want to cover with Connor Riley while we're lucky enough to have him here with us on the show. And, you know, Connor, I hate to belabor kind of a bad story, but I am curious your thoughts on this. I talked a moment ago about Isaiah Wilson. This is not a guy that I would have expected to just flame out the way that he has in the NFL. And, you know, listen, you got to call it like it is. This is a disastrous first year. There's a chance that he can, you know, shake all of this off and still go on to have an NFL career. But he has clearly had a hard transition into professional life. And if you're an NFL GM, these are the kinds of things that just causes you to panic, I would guess, because all of this is just very hard to see coming.
Yeah, the really telling comment for me, John Robinson, the Titans general manager last week, said this is not the player that we evaluated.
No.
And it's one of those things where it sort of feels like getting to the NFL was the destination for Isaiah Wilson, and once he got there, he felt that he had made it, when the reality is getting to the NFL is a part of the process, and from there you only have to continue to work harder. And I think that's unfortunately what has not happened with Wilson here. He's gotten in a ton of trouble both on and off the field, bouncing in and off of the COVID list. He had a DUI. He was in an incident report about an off-campus party at Tennessee State. Again, played four plays his first year, his only year in the NFL. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone takes a flyer on him, just given the immense talent that he has. But I think, as you said, it's just a complete disaster in his first year as a Tennessee Titan.
And I'm very comfortable saying this, although it may come across as harsh, that if he's having this much trouble managing his behavior, he's also going to have a hard time holding on to his money as well. It's just a fact. That's a lot of money. And
at 21, 22 years old?
Yeah. You know, if you can't show up for work on time, then you're going to make some bad choices at other places as well. So I hate to see it for him. I like Isaiah Wilson. I'd love to see him shake all of this off. But, man, what a tough start to his NFL career here thus far. Let me transition to this, because I was going to do more of this on the show today. I just kind of ran out of time. And I think that you may have a piece coming on this at DogNation.com as well. I talked before about the importance of the Georgia-Clemson game. It's a chance for Georgia to kind of establish itself as a top-flight, elite-level college team even before it gets to the SEC championship, and really putting pressure on the committee to treat Georgia the way that Notre Dame got treated last year as a possible at-large consideration, whether it wins the conference championship this upcoming year or not. I think all that's important. But it's also an interesting look at kind of how Georgia wins that game against Clemson. I referenced the ESPN story before about the big question related to Georgia. And, you know, they had some interesting things to say about that big question related to Clemson. It's something you and I have also talked about a good bit in the past here, that if you watch Clemson get manhandled by Ohio State in the college football playoff, you saw Tigers offensive line that played terrible, gave up two sacks, five tackles for loss. Travis Etienne could really get nothing going on the ground. And to me, that speaks to the opportunity opportunity that Georgia has when it faces Clemson as well. Georgia's front seven ought to be a strength of this team, whether it's rushing quarterbacks, whether it's, you know, stopping the run, whatever else. And if you really want to look, in my mind, at the formula for how you beat Clemson, I don't think you look much farther than that.
Would you say that Georgia's defensive line is their best position group?
I think there's a very good chance that's true. Yes, I think it is.
Well, knowing what we know about Clemson, you look at that Ohio State loss. You even look at the loss to Notre Dame last year when they didn't have Trevor Lawrence, who they're not going to have against Georgia on September 4th. Travis Etienne only had, I think, 23 rushing yards in that loss to Notre Dame. When you're able to sort of shut off the faucet when it comes to running the ball for Clemson and make them one-dimensional, it's very hard to win, not just for Clemson, but for anybody. And bringing back a guy like Jordan Davis, Julian Rochester, Devontae Wyatt, Trayvon Walker, and Jalen Carter taking on bigger roles, there is a path to victory that you can see here, and it really comes with Georgia's defensive line just outplaying Clemson's offensive line. Now, on the other side of the coin, it's sort of the same thing with Clemson's defensive line when it comes to Georgia's offensive line, because I've talked about before the questions that you have there. Yeah. And Clemson's defensive line, in my opinion, is every bit as good as what Georgia's defensive line will be. So it's a really interesting matchup, and whoever's defensive line I think plays better in that game is going to go a long way towards winning and probably getting into the college football playoff.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I went back and looked at the box score, like the play-by-play, you know, chart for that Clemson-Ohio State game. And I don't remember the exact number, but it was so interesting how many of the Clemson drives, they had a lot of threes and out that day, how many of those drives seemed to start with a Travis Etienne rush for 0 yards. That stymied on that first down led to a three and out for Clemson. All of a sudden, they're giving the ball back to Ohio State. And I think it just speaks to how important first down is going to be for both these teams. Really, in all the big games, it's about getting that explosive play right there from the beginning of a drive that kind of gets you ahead of the chains and, you know, ahead of schedule, moving towards a scoring play. But so much of what Clemson struggled with against Ohio State, which speaks to the point that you just made a moment ago, was they could not get Etienne going on first down. They chose to run him a lot on first down and had no success doing so. And then after that, the Ohio State defense was able to kind of pin its ears back and play much more aggressive. Clemson was really stymied on first down against the Buckeyes, the college football playoff game. And I got to say, as you said, for both these teams battling on the line of scrimmage, limiting the other side on that first down, to me, is going to go a long way towards determining that game.
Right. And now Clemson doesn't have Etienne, as he's also off to the NFL, and they don't have they brought in Will Shipley, a five-star recruit, and they've had some guys that have been in their program for a while, but they don't have a clear and obvious apparent successor on the same sort of talent level or potential talent level that Etienne brought there. So if Jordan Davis is the best player on the field and it shows up pretty obviously against Clemson, I think that's going to go a long way in potentially getting Georgia a win that day.
Yeah, I want to talk more about this on the show tomorrow, but I think that's kind of a fun thing to look at because it's not too early to start thinking about how a game of this magnitude is going to be decided. And listen, there's a lot to go with spring practice and everything else, but we already have a little bit of at least a thumbnail sketch of what both these teams are going to look like, and it does, I think, set up for a very interesting contrast. In some areas similar, in some areas different, but we already have a little bit of an idea of what Georgia-Clemson is actually going to look like when these two teams play each other.
Do you think this is Georgia's most important game in 2021, at least in the regular season?
I don't, because A, the Florida game is a revenge game, and to me, it's easier to make the playoff having lost to Clemson than it is to make the playoff having lost to Florida. So for me, you know, we actually talked about this last year going into last season, that Georgia was playing last year to put Florida deep into the rearview mirror so it wouldn't have to treat Florida as its most important game anymore. It could think about looming rematch with Alabama or a Clemson game. But Georgia didn't take care of its business last year. We're going to talk more about this Georgia-Florida game coming up in a moment of today's show. But just to be frank, you know, Georgia let Florida as a program hang around after last year. And based on the way that Florida beat up Georgia for most of that game, unfortunately for right now, Georgia hasn't earned the right to treat another team other than Florida as its most important game right now.
I think you're right there. The Clemson game is just going to have such obvious playoff ramifications, and I'm sure the national media will say when they eventually do the most important game for every top 25 team on ESPN, they'll say Clemson probably just because of the national perspective and sort of the narrative that surrounds Georgia there. But I do ultimately think you're right. That game against Florida, it'll validate that Clemson win all the much more of saying, hey, this Georgia team is a different team, because you look back a year ago, they couldn't beat this Florida team.
I don't trust the playoff selection committee to be consistent with its reasoning, so therefore mm-hmm. it has a way of sometimes feeling unfair, even if unfairness isn't its intentional goal. But if there was a degree of fairness, then I think you would say the Clemson game is more important for Clemson than it is for Georgia, because Georgia conceivably ought to have opportunities to rehabilitate its image were it to lose to Clemson, especially if it lost in a close game. You know, Florida should be ranked. The opponent in the SEC championship, assuming Georgia gets there, you know, should be of a high caliber, an Alabama or a top-ranked, you know, team from the SEC West beyond the Crimson Tide possibly. There ought to be chances for retribution that could help rebuild Georgia's image if it were to be, you know, knocked off by Clemson. But if, you know, Clemson were to lose to Georgia, those opportunities might be fewer and harder to come by. I don't know if Clemson plays North Carolina in the regular season. Carolina, though, has a chance to be a pretty highly ranked ACC team. Notre Dame's back to being an independent once again. So, you know, if you're Clemson, you lose the game. From a perception standpoint, you don't have as many opportunities to rebuild that image, at least, you know, that's the way it kind of looks to me.
Right. It's sort of, we've seen you can get into the college football playoff with one loss. And if you're Georgia, yeah, you don't want that first loss to come in the part of the season, but you know you have what you have on your schedule that you can make up the case. And again, if you win the SEC, you're going to be in the college football playoff. That's guaranteed. With Clemson, if they lose that first game, it's not only are they going to have to win out to even have a case to get into the playoff. If it's Clemson at the end of the season and it's a one-loss Clemson and, say, a one-loss Alabama or a one-loss Georgia, that head-to-head against Georgia is going to matter quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Let me transition to this. You wrote about Deshaun Miller, or at least about the transfer portal that Miller, you know, exited out of, ended up at Auburn. There was never any tangible connection between Miller and Georgia other than the speculation of, well, he played for Jamal Adai and, you know, he had, you know, kind of, you know, seem to fit the profile of what some of us have assumed that Georgia's looking for. It's just amazing to me, Connor, how, air quotes here, big this story became without any real connection to Georgia whatsoever. And now he's going to Auburn, and we'll never know if Georgia ever took a long look at Deshaun Miller or not.
It's why Kirby Smart laughed when he was sort of asked about the transfer portal and building on it. And he, I think, correctly pointed out, you know, every time a player goes into the portal, he said the media, but fans, I think, do this as well, of this guy's a really good player. Georgia needs really good players. Let's see if we can get this guy on our team. And Miller, obviously, I think is a little bit different, more so than, say, Arik Gilbert or some of the other players that have gone on the transfer portal, because he does appear to fit an apparent need at that cornerback position, as well as the Adai mentioned that you brought up. But at the same point in time, and I wrote this last week as well while bringing up Miller, Georgia's going to be patient in terms of adding to its roster. When you hear Kirby Smart talk about defensive backs and cornerbacks in particular, he says this is a position group that needs to develop. So even if they did bring in Deshaun Miller, that's really only a one-year fix on this position group. And Georgia really needs to develop a Keely Ringo, a Jalen Kimber, a Nylon Green for multiple years, because otherwise, if you're just bringing in grad transfers and sort of patching up the holes on the side of the boat without fixing the actual motor, a year from now, you're still going to find yourself in the same situation. So I think Kirby, and again, we've talked a lot about Nylon Green, Keely Ringo, Jalen Kimber, guys we all think are going to be really good players for Georgia. I think Kirby owes it to them to sort of see what they do this spring with starters reps, how they go out and perform in practice as the number ones at those positions. And if they're able to play well there in spring practice, obviously you want to see it in live game action. I think how they perform in spring determines how aggressive Georgia ultimately might be in bringing in a transfer portal player at the cornerback position.
Yeah, I told you this, I think, last week when we spoke, that, I mean, I think there's a way of looking at this that bringing in a guy like Deshaun Miller would have been fodder for negative recruiting against Georgia. Mm-hmm. Hey, look at these class of 2017 guys. They've been waiting for their turn. They finally thought they were going to get it. Then, lo and behold, Georgia brings in somebody else, or, you know, five-star who thinks he has a chance to play early. Maybe they told you that coming out of high school, but look what happens when you finally look like you're going to get your chance. So, I mean, I think there's a way that Georgia sets itself up for future recruiting success if it is truly willing to trust the guys that are on its mm-hmm. roster.
Right, and I think the transfer portal thing became much more, I don't know if reality is the right word, but a possibility after Tyreek Stevenson himself entered the transfer portal, because if you sort of look the way Georgia had built that cornerback position, they always sort of knew that this was going to be a year where they had a decent amount of turnover. And I believe that if Stevenson is still here and ultimately not lured away by the allures of home and the possibility of playing right away there, I think we're talking about this cornerback position a lot differently, where, yes, you don't have the experience, but you feel really comfortable about the guys that you had back in there. And I think Stevenson leaving may have led more people to looking into that transfer, myself included, into that transfer portal as a way to sort of bolster this position once again.
This is just my opinion, speculation, of course, but it would not surprise me, even after all of this, though, post-spring practice when a new crop of names may enter in, that Georgia may still do some shopping in the portal. I mean, obviously, Kirby's always looking for every opportunity he can make to make the roster better, so I wouldn't exactly close the book on Georgia taking a grad transfer, but there is a part of me that hopes they don't.
Right, yeah. It's you got to weigh both options here. If you're bringing in a grad transfer, that means one of the really talented cornerback prospects we just talked about probably isn't playing a whole lot. You look last year at DJ Daniel, a guy who I think is going to be drafted in the NFL draft. He had a hard time getting on the field because Georgia just didn't really rotate its outside corners all that much over the course of a game. So it is opportunity cost, I believe, is the fancy economic term that you like to use. Sure. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Shout out Dr. Medwed, my old econ teacher in high school. If you are choosing this one thing, a grad transfer player, you are sacrificing the further development of these young cornerback prospects that Kirby Smart has already spoken about the importance of developing.
I liked your story about the guys who had the most to gain from spring practice. I think that's a really interesting topic. And you know, at the quarterback spot, you mentioned Carson Beck, which I do think is really interesting. Obviously, all of us expect JT Daniels to be treated like the entrenched starter. I believe that he should be. But that battle to be the number two quarterback, Beck, who's been here for a year, you know, Brock Vandergriff, who comes in with sterling credentials. I think number two quarterback at Georgia for 2021 is a really attractive spot to be in. You may be playing a little bit more this year. Georgia playing a 12-game schedule. Georgia having comfortable leads. Traditional opportunity for backups to get in there and play. If you're the 2021 backup with, you know, Daniels maybe expected to go on to the NFL after this year is done, you could be in a really nice spot for the start of the 2022 season. And the battle between Vandergriff and Beck, and with that in mind, I think is going to be really, really interesting. And I do believe that Carson deserves plenty of consideration there.
And there's a name you didn't mention there in your little spiel talking about backup quarterbacks. And I believe he's actually the guy who's going to be the number two quarterback, or at the very least the first quarterback off the bench if, you know, JT Daniels' helmet pops off or he has to go into concussion protocol to get checked out.
You're talking about Stetson Bennett.
I am talking about Stetson Bennett. I know it's not popular. I know it's not cool. But for as much grief as he caught last year for how he played against Alabama and Florida, let's also not ignore the fact that he beat Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas, four SEC wins. And while, yes, he wasn't always the most impressive in those games, you even look back at the Cincinnati game where JT Daniels did leave for a play. Stetson Bennett stepped in, came out on the field. Todd Monken had all the faith in the world in him and called the pass play on a pretty consequential third and long, and Bennett completed it for 12 yards. So the Carson Beck, Brock Vandergriff angle is sort of even within the backup quarterback decision, a sub discussion of, well, how does Beck sort of, I think, take advantage of this spring? Because Vandergriff's knee is a question, and how healthy and how much he'll be able to do is certainly a story worth monitoring. And with, as you just all laid out there with Beck and Vandergriff, this is about 2022 for them, and how they set themselves up this spring, I think, can go a long way in positioning how we initially talk about that quarterback discussion a year from now, where Stetson Bennett probably won't be the name we're talking about.
You also mentioned Kendall Milton there at the running back spot. Everybody knows that Milton is good. Georgia's got a crop of running backs. I think they're all pretty good, to be honest with you. There's not a dud in the group, I don't believe, but a lot of folks look at Milton as the guy who has the best chance to be better than good, to be special, to be maybe even great. How much can a guy like that prove during the spring?
Well, I think we all here think that Kendall Milton is the most dynamic running back that Georgia has in terms of running the ball. You know, obviously James Cook, I think, is a better pass catcher. Kenny McIntosh is pretty shifty and capable in his own right, and you saw there at the end of the Peach Bowl. I think when it comes to Kendall, the thing I want to see is I want to see him take steps forward in sort of the smaller areas, the areas where Zamir White really excels as a pass blocker, as a, you know, obviously not the pass catcher that James Cook is, but in doing the little things really well, playing really well on special teams. That's what gets Zamir White on the field and stays on the field and earns the coaching staff trust that he's going to do the right things. I want to see Kendall Milton take that step forward. I want to see him continue to improve as a pass blocker, continue to improve in sort of the finer areas. And while you might not be able to differentiate yourself as a true running back in terms of what you're able to do running the football. I do think in the spring practice setting, it's an excellent opportunity for Kendall and all the running backs, obviously, to work on those little areas. And if Kendall's able to make an improvement there in that area where they can trust him as picking up a blitz on third down, that's only going to help him get on the field more.
Let me finish this way. You mentioned a couple of young players, Broderick Jones at the offensive line spot, obviously an offensive tackle, Kelee Ringo at cornerback. If I gave you the power to wave a magic wand with a national championship, obviously the goal, and you could give Broderick Jones a very effective season, or you could give Kelee Ringo a very effective season, but you can only choose one. Which is more important right now? Is it Jones or is it Ringo?
To me, it's Jones, because in the way I believe about college football now is, unfortunately, defense just does not matter as much as it used to, specifically pass defense. With the way route concepts are now and guys are able to get open, it's just hard to win defensively these days. And I think you look at the Alabama team, you look at the LSU team, Alabama's offensive line was dominant last season. And if you're telling me you get a really good left tackle, a guy you don't have to worry about, a guy you can leave out there on an island against another team's best pass rusher, that makes me feel a lot better about Georgia's national championship case than a really good cornerback. Because Georgia had that a season ago, I believe, in Eric Stokes and maybe even Tyson Campbell. And it ultimately just didn't matter, especially in that game against Florida.
I think that's exactly right. I think it's going to be fun to see. And I guess the assumption on my part is that Jones probably is a little ahead of a Tate Ratledge, who I do think is going to be, certainly heard from. And, Marius Mims, who's as good a prospect as Georgia brought in, maybe having to wait his turn a little bit. I would say that Broderick Jones is of those potential offensive tackles, including the Xavier Trusses and folks like that. Jones is the guy that I'm the most interested in heading towards this spring.
Right, and especially with what we know about Jones, he was going to have to put on weight from a season ago because I believe he came in at 285. The Georgia 2021 roster now lists him at 315 pounds. So if he's bulked up and better able to handle, I think, the physical rigors of SEC football, I think that's really going to help him potentially win a starting spot for Georgia.
I'll remind you, this is our Kroger Fresh Take with Connor Riley here on the program here today. And don't forget, Kroger's got low, low prices for all your Kroger stores. You can look for those yellow and red tags on each aisle for special savings. That's a great price that's guaranteed for you there at our friends at Kroger, taking really good care of you. Great food, but also at a great price. So keep your eye on those yellow and red tag sales going on at your local Kroger. Connor, great stuff. Thanks for being here as part of our Kroger Fresh Take today. I certainly appreciate that. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com and, of course, talking to you very soon here again as well.
Yep. As always, it was a pleasure, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really fun stuff all the way around there from Connor Riley. Great, great stuff. By the way, he's got some good stuff coming up at DogNation.com as well. As I told you before, nice look at Georgia-Clemson. We talked a little dogs and Clemson off the top of the program. He's got that coming at DogNation.com here today, so make sure you check that out. Before we do our SEC Through, let me talk about something else that's really fun coming up. How about the Major League Baseball All-Star events coming to Atlanta this year? Truist Park, going to be so much fun. The game itself, of course, Home Run Derby, everything else. Not just a chance to see great Braves like Freddie Freeman, who we expect to be there, obviously Ronald Acuna and folks like that, but also a chance to see some of the biggest stars outside of our market as well. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Aaron Judge, all of those a strong possibility here as well. It's going to be an unbelievable baseball event. I can't wait to enjoy this. I think the battery is just going to be amazing for the entirety of the time. Home Run Derby going to look so good there at Truist Park, and many of you want to be a part of this. The best way to secure your access to the All-Star Week events and the festivities is by becoming an A-List season ticket member. Of course, the deadline to do all of this is March 29th. Now listen, these tickets are going fast. There's also a great chance for you to get in on, the Braves games as well. Lots of options, whether you want the full season deal here or you want a 27-game kind of option that gives you a ton of flexibility when you have young kids like I do. That flexibility to come to some games and figure out which ones work for you makes a lot of sense there as well. So a lot of incentives to become a Braves A-List member right now. You get a chance to watch a really fun Braves team make another run through the National League East, but you also get a chance to secure some All-Star Week tickets there as well. So please go to Braves.com/A-List to learn a lot more about that. That's Braves.com/A-List. All right. Honesty compels me to admit, and this is where I have to get very serious here for a moment, that there's some trolling going on down in Gainesville, Florida. All Florida fans having a great time. Great time. It all starts this way, innocently enough. You may remember Florida, who not capable of acquiring elite talent the traditional way through high school football recruiting is forced to kind of cram, like you would do a kind of an all-night cram session for a task. Florida's kind of forced to kind of cram in the transfer portal, just trying to grab whatever sort of second chance you players they had a chance to get. One of those guys is DeMarcus Bowman, former Clemson running back. Well, Bowman now at Florida. Florida's started its spring practice, but a lot of video coming out of Florida spring practice, by the way. What must that be like? We don't get a ton of video when Georgia gets in the practice field. But anyway, the point here is that Bowman is seen running a wheel route. I think we may actually have some evidence of this. Yeah, Zach Goodall putting this out on Twitter. Anthony Richardson, who, by the way, I think has a chance to play some at quarterback for Florida, throwing the wheel route to DeMarcus Bowman. And, oh, my gosh, Florida fans having so much fun with that. Ah, laughing about wheel routes in Georgia and mocking UGA for not being able to cover the wheel route that when these two teams got together last November. And let's face it, that was true. Georgia had a hard time with that, and one of the main reasons that Georgia lost that game. But my reason for bringing this up is obviously not to troll Georgia fans. My reason for bringing this up is reminding you, and well, that's enough of that. I don't need to see any more of DeMarcus Bowman with the wheel route. We can take that down. My reason for bringing all this up is, if you don't have your game face on for Georgia-Florida, we'll do the Gator Hater countdown later on, 249 days from right now. But if you don't have your game face on for this as a Georgia fan, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know where your head is if you are not, as a fan, solely focused on shutting that bunch up down there in Gainesville. They are so proud of their four-loss season. They think they're on top of the world because they beat Georgia. And the fact of the matter is they did beat UGA. But if you're a UGA fan, and certainly UGA itself, coaches, players, everything else, the time for revenge is nearly not. It is time to go back down there to Jacksonville and show Florida what is what. All the social media chatter yesterday, just go look at that tweet from Zach Goodall. All those responses from those Florida fans, just loving every minute of that. So revenge will be sweet for the Dogs come October. You better believe Eddie, the official mascot of Dog Nation Daily, certainly believes that. Outside the SEC, there was interesting news yesterday. Notre Dame has announced that it will not participate in the upcoming EA Sports College Football video game until name, image, likeness concerns are alleviated. Notre Dame wants its players to get some sort of group licensing deal through all of this, and they're going to be slow to get involved in the project until all of that is figured out, which I'm obviously fine with. I don't mind players getting paid to be a part of this game. I just want everybody to be really, really careful here. Very interesting story out of California yesterday, some legislation that was announced at the state level, state California Assembly, with like onerous, you know, plans for college football that involved cap on coaches' salaries and cap on building expenditures, facilities enhancements, and all that kind of stuff that you just really see within like sort of like the political wing of our country, politically minded people, both in the media and certainly elected officials. There is a certain stripe of person right now that has really decided to go to war against college football. And they're going to use everything at their disposal to try to harm this sport, whether it be name, image, and likeness or anything else that's been in the news over the course of the last year. So I don't mind Notre Dame holding out on this. I don't mind them, you know, trying to, you know, push for a name, image, likeness benefit for the players that'll be a part of this game, even though most players would be more than happy to see their name on the game without, you know, getting anything for it. I don't mind them actually getting paid for that. But everybody at the top level of college football, whether it's Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, or anybody else, just be really, really careful how you navigate these months ahead. And know this, there are people quietly working as an enemy, an adversary against you. They want to destroy the sport. They don't like the kinds of people who like college football, nor do they like the kinds of things that college football celebrates. So be very, very careful how you navigate this in the time to come. On a much lighter note, one more thing to kind of finish up here on our SEC through. I saw a story. It's been kind of around the NFL media a little bit. So Devontae Smith, the Heisman Trophy winning great Alabama wide receiver, was asked which quarterback that he thought was better between his guy from 2018, Tua Tagovailoa, and also 2019, or the guy that he caught pass from in 2020, Mac Jones. And as the story goes, Devontae Smith did not hesitate to say that he thought that Mac Jones was the better quarterback between the two. Now, isn't this amazing? And I don't really know what you take from this, but there was a time not too long ago that I think a lot of folks thought that Tua Tagovailoa was going to go down in history as one of the truly special names to ever play the quarterback position. I think a lot of folks thought it was kind of a given that he would eventually be viewed as an all-time great. But now he's not even the best Alabama quarterback in recent memory. Devontae Smith's opinion certainly carries a lot of weight. It's also not an obvious thing that Tua's the future of the quarterback spot there with the Miami Dolphins. You know, I guess the only thing you take from this is that we have a tendency to make up our mind on things really, really fast, only to find out later on that maybe we kind of rushed that decision. I'm talking about, you know, those of us who give college football opinions, things like that, football opinions in general. Isn't it funny just how quickly we had statues erected of Tua Tagovailoa to all of a sudden figure out that, you know, maybe he's not quite as special as it seemed. I said this a lot going into last year's draft, that I thought it was the Alabama receiving core that was the truly special position group at Alabama, and actually they probably aided the job of Tua Tagovailoa. As it turns out, that looks probably true. I don't know that Tua is a bad quarterback necessarily, but kind of the historic rarefied air that once we thought he was in, I don't know that that's quite as true as it once was. We'll make that your SEC through. And by the way, speaking of those lousy stinking Gators, of course, you can continue to send your submissions to be a part of our Gator Hater Roll Call to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. Shout out today to the Miami Hurricanes baseball program, which did take a series against number one ranked Florida in baseball over the weekend and had some great fun with that on social media as well, showing you the Florida F transitioning to the L. Miami doing a great job of that. You love to see the L by Florida taking it there against the Hurricanes. So I've had my problems with Miami over the course of this offseason related to some of the stuff with Tyreek Stevenson and everything else, but I got no problem giving them the golden shoe for a terrific piece of social media artwork there. The Florida F becoming a big-time L. You love to see that. And as I said before, Georgia fans, get serious about the cocktail party coming up in October. 249 days from right now. It's our Gator Hater Countdown. Get ready for that revenge because it's going to be sweet. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.